Thanks for listening to the BGS Podcast Network. This episode is brought to you by The Bandwagon, the brand new BGS membership platform. We realized recently that we leave all interviews, video sessions, and festivals with a plethora of content that never sees the light of day. A goldmine of G-runs, if you will. We know many of you are as passionate about roots music and independent journalism as we are, and we wanted to share the haul. Enter The Bandwagon, your opportunity to access exclusive video and editorial content, as well as other perks like VIP giveaways, merch, discounts, pre-sales, and more. Explore Bandwagon membership tiers and learn more at thebluegrasssituation.com/bandwagon.
I'm only now barely just coming to grips with being okay with who I am and where I am, you know, because my entire life, it's never good enough. No matter what happens, somebody's always doing better, right? No matter how well the band does, like, well, people don't like us as much as Nirvana or the Beatles or whatever. You know, there's always like this, man, that was great. You played great guitar last night. I'm like, yeah, but I mean, I'm not as good as Jimi Hendrix or whatever. You know, there's all these like terrible comparisons that are flying around.
We often define artists by their output, their records, books, movies, and the times they're on stage.
But the art is made in the quiet, the struggle, and the mundane, the hours that no one sees. I'm Michaela Ann.
And I'm Aaron Schaefer-Hayes. This is The Other 22 Hours, an exploration of the creative life, lived in the in-between. This week's conversation is our first one back after our experimental summer series of reissues, where for the first time ever, we dipped into the archives of 160 plus conversations that we have to highlight some ones that we have loved over the years. We hope that you guys found some conversations that you enjoyed and opened up some of those other things. But now we are back with a fresh new conversation with Jim James, who is the frontman of multi-Grammy nominated rock band My Morning Jacket. And he also just released his sixth solo record. He has also produced records for numerous artists, including Ray LaMontagne and a former guest of ours, S.G. Goodman. And back in the early 2000s, if you remember, he was part of the folk supergroup called Monsters of Folk with M. Ward and Mike Magus and Connor Obers of Bright Eyes.
And this conversation was really tender, dare I say. It was a lot about self-love and his own journey with sobriety and healing, exploring lots of different healing modalities. But I feel like the biggest takeaway is just the journey of really learning that no amount of outside success or affirmation can heal your insides.
It is a fulfilling conversation. Here is Jim James.
So we always like to start with the same question of how are you today? That's a how are you really? And where are you physically and creatively?
I'm physically on the planet Earth inside of the body known as Jim in Louisville, Kentucky. I'm okay. I've got some kind of little cold I'm fighting off. You know what I mean? So it's one of those kind of days where you're kind of a little bit bleary. But other than that, I feel pretty good. I feel pretty grateful. Yeah, I'm just glad to be here.
And where are you creatively in this time?
You know what? It's funny. I'm in an interesting creative time because I just got done creating a new solo record, which is coming out soon. And I've also been doing a lot of songwriting for a new My Morning Jacket album that we're going to record in November. But it's interesting, like I feel like we've been doing a lot of touring and traveling and stuff too. So I feel like creatively at this moment, I'm dormant. My body is like, and my spirit is like, no, rest. You know, it's like rest. It's like you've already got a pile of songs that you can work on for the jacket record. You just finished this solo record. It's like, no more.
Yeah. You know,
for this moment. So I've gotten better at respecting that. I used to be terrible at respecting that, telling the workhorse to stop working. So yeah, I'm creatively just contentfully resting, not trying to get anything accomplished.
Nice.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Wrestling with the workhorse, like you said, was that like a ambition kind of thing, or was it a fear thing? You know, was it a fear that if you stopped running, everything would stop and you needed to keep going?
Both. All of the above. Yeah. I mean, it's so deep, you know, when you get into it, it's like each of our stories is different, but it's like you know, I always wanted the world to love me because I felt like I didn't fit in here. And so I was always like, if I play guitar better, if I sing better, maybe then people can love me. You know, I can love myself. And in the ladder of capitalism that's been drummed into us all so ruthlessly, you know, that we can never be content where we are. And we've always got to climb one more rung, one more rung, one more rung. You know, I'm still battling with it, but I feel like ever since I stopped drinking about 4 years ago, that combined with great therapists that I found, combined with other healing things I've done, has helped me start to try and just like be more peaceful where I am, be more present where I am, you know. And there's still that workhorse back there in the background, the, you know, the taskmaster's like, keep going, keep going. But I think I've spent enough time with that part of myself that I can just give him a hug and be like, you're all right, man. Like, you don't need to keep whipping the horse right now. Like, let's just chill. Let's rest. Because we've nearly killed ourselves several times now by running too hard and working too hard and stuff like that. I think we all, most people at this point in time, are battling that inner fight against capitalism.
Yeah.
In that kind of ruthless way that our world makes us think we're never good enough.
100%. And also, as a professional musician, the pace that you think you need to be creating and producing and sharing is so different than our actual spiritually creative tempo. Do you know who Iris Dement is?
Uh-huh.
I love Iris Dement. She put out a record a few years ago, and I remember it was the first one in maybe a couple decades. And I remember she released a statement saying, like, I only make a record when I feel really called to say something. And I thought about that because I was like, that feels so foreign to so many of us who are like, well, we have to make a record every year because our numbers go down, or you have to, you know, stay relevant, or people forget about you, or you have a record deal that you're under contract for and you need to deliver. And it's so at odds. So you're grappling with legitimate financial career survival as well as like personal, emotional, creative survival. Especially like someone like you who's been doing this a long time and from the outside looking in, seems like you're established. You've got it. Can you talk about how maybe that also is a farce, that idea of like, no, I've arrived and I've got this and I feel secure in this career path?
Oh, God, it's such a farce. Yeah. I mean, it's like, because I'm only now barely just coming to grips with being okay with who I am and where I am, you know, because my entire life, it's never good enough. No matter what happens, somebody's always doing better, right? It's like, in my mind, it's like, no matter how well the band does, it's like, well, yeah, but people don't like us as much as Nirvana or the Beatles or whatever. You know, there's always like this negative voice. Or, you know, if I'm like, somebody's like, man, that was great. You played great guitar last night. I'm like, yeah, but I mean, I'm not as good as Jimi Hendrix. Or, you know, there's all these like terrible comparisons that are flying around. And I feel like, yeah, I mean, really just, I'm only just barely starting to like wake up out of that and just be like, I can only control what I can control. And it seems to me, the only thing that I can control is my own inner peace and my own inner happiness. And therefore, that enables me to be nicer to the people around me. And I feel like with my muse as well, or the spirit, or whatever you want to call that part of creativity, I feel like we've established a better relationship because the spirit knows that I want to dance with it. And I know that it's going to dance with me when it wants to dance with me. And there can't be force there. That's the thing I think we mistake a lot. It's like, I got to get this thing going done. I got to do this. At least for me, it's like, I mean, I've tried to force that to happen a lot. And it's like, it just never turns out the way it should versus when you just let it flow and let it happen. And one of the things I think as musicians that is so cool is if you're playing live music, that's a place where you can let your creativity flow in different ways. You know, you can still use the material you have, let it grow, let take it in different directions, you know, kind of follow the spirit of the moment in ways where you're not having to like force yourself to record another record or, you know, do another thing or whatever. Because I try to remember at the end of the day, it's like the earth is just a tiny speck of sand in the cosmos, you know, the 1.3 million earths fit inside the sun. That's how small the earth is, you know, and it's like, I just keep thinking about like, it's so important, but it's also so not important. You know what I mean? And it's like, the more I can try and say amidst all the chaos and the noise, I'm just like, I can control trying to love myself. I can control trying to be good to people around me. Like, I'm trying to focus on those things I can control And in terms of like creativity and stuff, it's kind of the same. It's right now, for example, I haven't been feeling very good. I've been letting myself do nothing and just read and just trying, like, because I've got a show coming up this weekend. I'm like, whereas before, maybe 5 or 10 years ago, I'd be like, oh, gotta keep going. You gotta keep going. You haven't been in the studio today. You gotta work on something. And I'm like, wow. Just like, just, you know, it's yeah. okay to let yourself rest. It's okay to not have to keep climbing the ladder, pumping out the stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, that's been really great. I'm really grateful that I've been able to make a little more peace with that.
Yeah, I feel like also sometimes that's what it takes, is the ability to fully let go. If you're not fully letting go, then you're never fully recharging. You're kind of just like this rock skipping along the bottom. You know, you're like, I think I'm doing fine. For me, I always relate it to like Looney Tunes when they run off the edge of a cliff and they're cool until they look down, you know? That's basically my existence as of late.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I think most of us, yeah.
Was there a moment for you, or was it gradual, where you were noticing or realizing, oh, the way that I've been operating isn't serving me? This like seeking of outside validation that's actually not going to work to fill me up. What was the moment that made you think, I need to figure some stuff out?
It's a combination of things. I mean, I was just kind of running for most of my life, so lost in the story of Jim. And so deeply lost in the drama of Jim, the successes and the failures and the, you know, the heartache and the romance and the triumphs and everything. I was so obsessed with this whole Jim story. When I found a great therapist and started doing EMDR and parts work therapy, that was like one of the first things that helped me step back and look at the different parts of myself and get more in touch with the observer or the spirit or the soul or whatever you want to try and call it that is behind this thing called Jim. And I feel like I've had some really, really beautiful healing experiences with ayahuasca and ketamine therapy, where I've had similar experiences where I kind of have gone through some kind of death state where I lose Jim, but I'm still here. Like my consciousness is still here. And there's this thing that has been very, very helpful for me to realize that I am only here for a limited time in the role of Jim. I hope I get to live to be 129 or whatever, but who knows? You know, maybe I'll die tomorrow. Nobody knows. But I was so lost thinking that I was Jim, that I was trying to destroy Jim most of my life and drink Jim away and, you know, and just like run from everything. But now that I've kind of stepped back, I'm able to hold Jim with more compassion and try and treat myself better, try and treat this body better, try and listen to what it's telling me versus forcing it to run, you know, forcing it to drive 120 miles an hour when the check engine light's on and the, you know, the brakes are low and the tires are low. It's like, you gotta stop or you're gonna die. And I'm like, no. You know, it's like, I really encourage people to try and find their own path to doing that. When I talk to people, I think that's one of all of our biggest problems, is how mean we are to ourselves. You know, because I think everybody's so focused externally, especially with social media and news, and everybody's so focused on the world and all these politicians and all of this stuff, but they're completely ignoring themselves, completely neglecting themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's like we're in our own heads being so cruel to ourselves. It's not strange that there's so much chaos in the world then. I just kind of try to encourage people to find whatever path sounds good to them to start to love themselves. And, you know, it's like work on your own house, you know, before you start judging your neighbor's house. Get your own affairs in order, because your house isn't tidy, you know? You know what I mean? I feel like that's the thing. Everybody's online yelling at each other about whatever, and then their own house is in chaos. You know, it's sliding into the ocean. You know, they're doing nothing to take care of themselves. And I'm just like, we're missing that. We're missing that. I feel like that's the biggest step that we're all missing in this whole thing. That's one thing that's really helped me a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that what resonated while you were saying that is like the old Zen saying. It's where this emperor sends off two sages, I guess, to different islands to go find like the meaning of happiness, the meaning of life. And they go and they're gone for 3 months. I'm taking liberties with the story, but they're gone for, and they come back. He's like, well, what did you find? And one of them's like, oh, it was horrible. Everybody was really mean. Everybody was really cold. There was no connection. I'd found nothing. And the other person was like, well, it was really open. Everybody was like very sharing and communal. I learned so much about myself, blah, blah, blah. Two completely different experiences. And then come to find out they were just on the same island. And what they were seeing was like their own inner existence.
Oh, yes, yeah. Absolutely. I love that. I've never heard that before. That's great.
You were saying find your own path. It seems like you've explored a lot of different paths. Is that accurate to say?
Yeah. And I mean, I'll explore anyone I hear about. You know, if you tell me one right now, I'm like, all right, I'll, because I've always felt that something is wrong. And that's something that's been a part of my experience as Jim, is that something is wrong. There's an error code that's flashing both inside of Jim and in Jim's experience of the world. That's predominantly I'm going through life. And not that I've also had fun and I've had a great life and I've had so much beauty, but there's always in the background, there's been this error code flashing, like something is wrong. Something is wrong. I think I got lucky that I had, my mom's a very open person and my dad's a very hardworking person. And I feel like something about their combination, I was never afraid to try therapy because a lot of people around me are afraid. And a lot of people, there's a, you know, think it makes you look weak. There's this big thing about, but for some, whatever reason, even through high school or whatever, I've always tried to like solve this error code. And I guess maybe that's my dad's work ethic or whatever. That's like, you know, even that is some kind of task to accomplish, but at least that seems like a healthy task to accomplish. But, you know, it's like finding a great therapist or finding great healing things is kind of like dating or any other relationship. It's not always easy. You're not going to just walk into the first therapist's office and be like, this is great. Okay. And have one session and be like, everything's great. All right. This is awesome. I feel great. You know, it's like it's a very, very arduous process. I'm 48 now. I didn't find the therapist that really changed my life until I was 40 or 41 or whatever, you know, like somewhere in the pandemic. My math's a little off, probably 44.
One of the things that I'm always increasingly interested in as we've gotten older, we're both 40 and like in the music world, and we went to music school in New York City, and I worked at Nonesuch Records, and we've been working musicians forever, and I lived in Nashville for over a decade as well. So our whole existence, I'll just speak for myself, my adult existence has only been surrounded from the time I was in college with like high achieving, aspirational and working musicians, and like early on in the professional setting as well. And the thing that I've noticed and observed is how music is this source of emotional processing and solace and beauty and love. And that's why so many of us highly emotional people are drawn to it. But the thing I'm curious about is how then when we make it a career, it seems to fuck a lot of people up. And living in Nashville for so long, we're like, part of the reason we started this podcast is because it felt like we were getting two different stories. We'd see each other on social media and it seemed like everybody was doing great. And then we'd have dinner and it'd be like all the suffering that's happening, whether it's the financial challenges of touring or the emotional challenges of not being home or the disappointments or things not being the way that we thought they would be by now in our careers. It becomes this source of suffering, which to me makes me feel, and it has been in my life too, and it makes me so sad because I'm like, music was so pure when we were younger. I'm curious if you can speak to that and if you've addressed that in your own life head on or thought about that, if you've had any approaches to connect to the purity of it.
Whew, that's great. Well, I have thought so many things. We could speak for hours and hours and hours. You know, so our career, I feel like we kind of slid in under the garage door of the internet truly coming down. You know, so I feel like we were kind of around for a couple years before iTunes happened and then, you know, Spotify came in. So we were able to viscerally feel the loss of selling CDs or, you know, like this whole half of our income being taken away by streaming and YouTube and all of that stuff. It's weird because in some ways I think streaming is amazing, right? You've got like all the music in the world in your pocket at any time. But why can't we be paid fairly for that? You know, why can't we just figure this out where people are paid a fair thing and figure this out? But then I start to go down the rabbit hole further and I'm like, well, man, if most of the people I know can't even afford health insurance, then please take my music for free. The problem starts to go lower and lower and lower of just the way that humans are so cruel to each other. There's no concern for basic dignity and basic safety and basic health of all people on the planet. There's plenty of room on this planet for every being to live in peace. You know, there really is. There's plenty of resources, but for whatever reason, these five men hold all of the money, you know, in the top of the thing, and everything's all tied up and bound up. And again, it's like there's a deep problem that's being missed. And I feel like these men who are holding on to this wealth and power so tightly, they're doing that because of a deficit in their own soul and because of pain they haven't faced and truth they haven't faced. I think of this hypothetical scenario of if aliens came down right now and they stopped everything. And they're like, all right, everybody stop. And they paused everything and they hooked us all up to feeding tubes and water tubes so we didn't die. And they're like, everybody, here is a therapist that is perfect for you. Nobody goes forward until you start figuring out your shit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and everybody had to do it. Doesn't matter how rich or how poor you were or whatever. I mean, I really feel like if we did that for 2 or 3 months or whatever, we'd see this massive change, you know, and we would start to work things out. And when that flips back around to musicians, I think it's just that basic thing of like, people aren't treated fairly. People mm-hmm. aren't treated with kindness. And I feel like this world, you're raised to value money and you're raised to value status and all this stuff. And you're told that these people who are at the top are successful. You know, you look at these sad men that are in control of the world right now, and it just makes you want to cry, you know, because their vibrations are so off. Mm-hmm. Vibrations are real, you know, and you see these men and they're suffering, their vibrations are insane. Yet they're the successful ones, and they've got trillions and trillions of billions of dollars and all this stuff. While the rest of us are like trying to get our little piece to just live, until we face our demons, we're not going to get over this hump. How many times do we have to watch this story of humans destroying themselves with war and chaos and greed? It's like, I'm sick of this story. You know, it's time for a new story. It starts with us. How can we start the story over? I think it starts with us facing our own shit and coming correct with ourselves and trying to be like, okay, am I living the way that I want the world to be? Am I being kind? Am I being kind to myself? Am I living how I want these people that I keep complaining about, how I want them to live? But for some reason, it's built into humans that they don't want to do that. We refuse that at every step. We're like, no, I don't think so. I'll just drink it away, or I'll just smoke it away, or whatever. Maybe tomorrow. You know, it's like, I think we don't realize that it all goes quicker than you think, you know, it's later mm-hmm. than you think, as that song says. But I have hope. Time is such a strange thing, and the universe is doing its own thing, and we're trying to deal with it. And the more I try and remember that, too, that, like, the universe has something going on far bigger than anything I can even begin to try and imagine. So the more I can, like, let go of Jim's egoic desires or whatever and try and get in tune with the world, mm-hmm. you know, like, if you have a flat tire or something, instead of being like, God damn it! I've got the flat tire and everything always happens to me. It's like, okay, the universe wants me to have a flat tire for some reason. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. do I want a flat tire? No. Yeah, do I have a flat tire? Yes, I've got a flat tire. What do I do about it? You know, like, do I complain and bitch and go down some tunnel about myself? Or am I like, okay, what do I do with this thing? You know, and I feel like that's kind of part of what I'm trying to figure out too, and kind of live more in that. Because I feel like the more I can live in that path, the easier it is and the happier I am. And the more mm-hmm. peaceful I am. Maybe happy is the wrong word, because you're not happy to have a flat tire, but if you can be peaceful with it and roll with it, mm-hmm. there's some reason there that it's happening.
Yeah, if you can be accepting of it, it's kind of the understanding that there's inherently struggle in existence on this planet, you know, this is exactly how it is. We have 2 young children, and so my short-term memory is pretty shot at the moment, but sometime in the last couple of weeks, I was having one of those days where it's just bad thing after bad thing after bad thing, and it just got to a point where, like, one last thing happened, and that's what flips the scales, and it just, like, makes you laugh. You're like, yep, cool, of course. It's one of those days. Yep. It's great. And then, like, and then totally. Nothing matters. Everything just kind of, like, shakes off you. But until that moment, it's like the day just, like, kept cratering and kept going further and further. And you just get to that point where you're like, cool, this is the day. This is what we're having. And it gets peaceful in a sense. Hey, just a quick pause from this conversation. The Other 22 Hours is an independent production built entirely on the idea that these quiet, honest conversations matter. The best way to support our work is simply to share it. So if you can think of one person who would appreciate this show, please pass it along. And if you haven't yet, please follow our show on your listening platform of choice or subscribe to our channel on YouTube. It's a small action that makes a massive difference for us. Thanks for being here. Let's get back to our conversation.
We're so ingrained with this idea. We are the star of our own show, and it's so much about how we're doing. I think about all this stuff because of how deeply I struggle with it at times. But when I step back and think about, we can't be winning all the time. That's not a good story. That's not also a good experience. And we forget how deeply connected we all are with each other, that we need others to be doing well as well. That when, you know, when we have this sense of jealousy or competition, the laws of the universe show us we all need to be doing well. And going back to kind of the structural capitalism society, this idea, this like rugged individualism, and I don't want my taxes to pay for their schools if I don't have kids or whatever it is. It's like, well, wait. If your postman can't afford healthcare, like who's going to deliver your mail? Who's going to run the car wash that you have to take your fancy car to because you are the chosen one that's done so well in life? Who's going to take care of the kids of your doctor? Like there's so many things that I'm like, I don't understand why you think this doesn't directly benefit you for everyone else to also be having their needs met. But you think it takes away if they're not directly paying for it because we have this misconstrued idea of how we pay for things. And so I try and translate that to approaches to emotional suffering when I'm focusing on music career stuff. If I didn't get a tour and I see somebody else got the tour that I was like vying to get and it makes me feel crushed and disappointed, it's like I could also like be really jealous of that person and think that everything's so easy for them and how come they get everything? Or I could be like, that's really awesome that they got that win. And who knows the number of losses they've experienced or, you know, just trying to like see the bigger picture and the weaving of it all.
I mean, it's a fabric, right?
Yeah. But it's really hard to remember.
It is so hard to remember because I think we all kind of believe in the Disney myth that we need to become a star. And if we become a star, then everything will be fine. You know, then it'll be great. I won the game. I won the race, you know, and it's like, and you look at everybody who has won the race or whatever in music. I've been having this Grateful Dead moment recently where I always liked the Grateful Dead, but I wasn't like a full Deadhead or anything, but I've kind of getting more and more into them. Talk about successful, you know, arguably the most successful live band of all time, right? You know, just, and I watched this film of them from 91 at Giant Stadium, huge concert. And you see Jerry Garcia and you see his suffering. I've read about it and read about his struggles with addiction and all of this stuff. But you see his love for the music is so pure. It's coming out of him. And I'm kind of like holding both at once in this incredible way where I'm like, man, it does not look easy for him right now. Like, here's a guy that's had all the success you could want and is suffering so much. But the music is there. And that's kind of the thing I think about a lot. Because you see all these figures, whether it's Kurt Cobain or Jimi Hendrix or Jerry Garcia or whoever, Nina Simone, or like all these people that are all the people we look up to, there's so much suffering there, but the music is always there. And I think that's the thing. A lot of people get so lost in their career path, they forget about the music. You know, they're worried about the social media and they're worried about the wardrobe and they're worried about all this bullshit. But they're not spending any time with the music. So I feel like that's the thing that I try to remember and focus on is like, it's called playing music for a reason. You're playing like a child. When I'm in the studio with the music or I'm on stage with the music, it's all worthwhile. All of the good and all of the bad and all of the success and all of the failure. It's like the music is still there. And I feel like that's the thing that I really feel like we are all the same. I feel like we are all this ocean. And we're each a little wave, but we're all the ocean as well. And we're all special, but we're also not special. And I feel like the music is a wave from wherever we come from of what we really are like. The music is a reminder to us what is pure and what is true. But we come here to be humans, to learn and suffer and whatever the fuck. You know, we're on this whole thing. But I think that's the thing is we get so lost in this thing. We forget about the rest, and the music is a reminder of the rest. The rest of where we come from or whatever we are is so huge, we're not supposed to be able to remember it or understand it as humans. But I do think if we can remember that this human thing is just a little grain of sand of what we are, you know, and I think the music is a reminder of something bigger, something much bigger that's more true of what we truly are and where we truly come from. Beyond the human thing. And I don't mean disrespect to the human thing either because it's a beautiful experience and it's so important and it's so incredible, but it's also, I feel like it's just a tiny piece of the puzzle. And I think we mistake it for the whole puzzle.
Yeah. Man,
on that, that kind of pings into a question I had earlier when you were talking about zooming back and seeing this being this thing that is Jim at the moment. I'm sure you've gotten this question a lot, but I'd love to look through this lens that you were saying of the music is the thing and human existence is a grain of sand of stepping into like a solo project after all of the stuff with My Morning Jacket? What was the impetus there? And not like, oh, I wanted to explore my own music. I'm sure that was part of it. Do you think that was also part of this exploring Jim thing?
Definitely. Well, I just love recording, and I have a studio in my house, so I'm just kind of always recording, and I love playing all of the instruments. But in My Morning Jacket, it's so beautiful because we've got a band where we do our thing and we create our vibe. I don't need to play bass in My Morning Jacket. I don't need to play drums in My Morning Jacket, you know, but I love playing those things and I love vibing out on synths and stuff like that. So I'm kind of always in the studio just working with stuff. So this is my sixth solo album or seventh solo album or something. Whenever I do a solo album, it's so cool because it's like I feel like that dance or whatever with the spirit is coming to a close and around, you know, and the spirit's kind of like, this is a nice group of things. They kind of go together well. You know, let's put that out there. So I'm like, okay, great. Like this record, Wowed Out, started 15 years ago or so when I wrote a bunch of themes for film score that I was trying to do. And I went and worked with this great composer, Brian Reitzel, out in LA. And we got fired from this movie, you know, and it was, you know, we were so bummed. In hindsight, it turned out great because the movie didn't turn out that great. And got to keep all the music and stuff. So I had all of these really cool melodies that I had written. And Brian's an incredible drummer and percussionist. And we had created all this cool music. I always liked it. And over the years, I would pop back into it and listen to it or whatever and be like, oh, man, I want to do something with that. But again, you can't force it to happen. So it's not like I'm going to sit here at the desk for 8 hours a day until this one score piece turns into a 3-minute song with beautiful lyrics and beautiful chorus or whatever. But it just, for whatever reason, the season of my life a year ago or whenever that was, for some reason, these songs all clicked in again. And I got really obsessed with them and really inspired by them. And I just started taking walks with the music and I would listen to it and I would add something else, add another guitar, add another keyboard, add some more drums. It all just started happening. And that's the part that I love about the dance of music with at least the way my spirit guides or muse or the universe, whatever. It's like, it's coming in. It's all I can do to not go in the studio. It's like, and then when it's done, I don't go in the studio for months. Sometimes I'll look at the studio and I'll be like, I wonder if I'll ever use that again.
Yeah.
You know, but then when it's flowing, you can't keep me out of there. I'm like, I'm going to try this thing. Oh, maybe I'll try this keyboard. Oh my God. Maybe I'll try this lyric. Or maybe I'll try this lyric. That part is so fascinating. Just the solo records just come from me. I just love to use the studio. The studio to me is my favorite instrument. You know, I love gear. I love recording. I love microphones. I love Pro Tools. I love the whole thing. And then I love too, when we do Jacket Record, I love now to just step back and play guitar and sing and just be a part of the band. I love all of those things.
Has that been a easy transition between the two? To step from something you have so much control to then being just a part of a team of chefs?
No, it wasn't always because I had such ruthless whip cracking. You know, again, my whole self-worth was based on my music career. Every little bit of love I could try to find in myself, I had to dictate all terms of everything. And again, I say this with love for myself too and no regret because everything is what it is. And it's like, I'm proud of everything we've done. But when I look at the last 4 or 5 years, well, it's funny, our self-titled record we did in 2019, kind of right before the pandemic happened. And then I worked a lot finishing it during the pandemic. Like I was doing everything. We were in the studio and I've got my computer open and I'm controlling Pro Tools and I'm trying to finish writing lyrics and I'm trying to do a great vocal performance and I'm trying to do a great guitar solo and then the drum mic's broken and I'm trying to fix the drum mic. And I'm like, it was literally just the five of us in the studio and I'm trying to do all of these jobs. And then after the pandemic happened and I found this therapist and I started doing all of this EMDR and these parts work and I start having more compassion for myself. And I'm like, Jesus, man, you don't have to do all of this stuff. You can let go, you know? And that was such a beautiful experience. Of the next record we did with Brendan O'Brien, I just let go. And it was such a joy. All I'm doing, I'm going to sing, I'm going to play guitar, work on my lyrics. Brendan will figure out the fucking snare mic if it's broken. Brendan will choose the right preamps. Brendan will fucking figure all that shit out because I trust him. You know, that's the other thing. It's like a trust thing. It's like you have to trust people to do their job. It took me so long to realize that. And again, I don't have any regrets and I don't even think one album's better than the other or whatever. You know, I don't think there's any better or worse, but I do feel like the more I've been able to let go and treat myself with compassion has allowed me to be more open and compassionate to all of the other guys in the band and all of the other people we work with, and let things be more peaceful, and I'm not desperately flailing around trying to do everything just so I can love myself some way, you know, that doesn't even end up working anyway.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to ask, how the relationships and the dynamic with your bandmates have evolved or shifted as you've done this work, and also what are they doing? Because I would imagine this is like a natural tendency for a lot of people as you get older. Are you finding commonality with the bandmates and the dynamic there?
So much commonality. Yeah. I mean, we talk about it all the time, how grateful we are for each other and how grateful we are that like everybody's on a similar path. Everybody is doing their own work. Tom and Patrick both quit drinking a few years before I did. And it was beautiful because they never put any pressure on me. They never recommended to me that I should stop or anything. But I kind of was able to follow their lead through, you know, and I feel like Carl and Bo are always working on themselves to become more peaceful. And we really spend a lot of time in gratitude over that, because if one person was fighting that or on a different path or doing something, then our focus would have to be on, okay, how do we help this person? How do we navigate through this? But if everybody's kind of in this circle where they're all working together, it has been just so beautiful. You know, it's hilarious. It's almost like some kind of cute cartoon or something where we're just like, oh, just can't believe how lucky we are that we're all healthy and alive and we didn't fucking OD somewhere.
Yeah.
We didn't, you know, we didn't kill each other. We didn't, you know, we're not like fighting bitterly and both requiring no contact unless we're on stage. You know, it's like these things that you hear about with so many people. And I think it's part of our generation, well, everybody, to kind of destroy this myth that youth is the only good time in your life, you know, because I feel like there's a thing happening with a lot of people that I think is really beautiful, where the consciousness is opening up and people are seeing like, whoa, getting older can be a really beautiful thing. Like if you take care of yourself and you learn to like treat yourself with love and you learn and you grow this acceptance and you grow this thing, you know, it's like there's part of what's happening now where I think a lot of people are waking up to that. And I think it's everybody's responsibility to like take their own life and say, I can love my life. I can treat myself well. I can be good to others. We can all enjoy this thing together and enjoy the youth too, you know, enjoy what they're creating, but learn that it's all part of a thing and everybody's gonna do the same ride. You know what I mean? It's like, I feel like that's another thing too, when people are like, wow, we're getting old and nobody gives a shit about us anymore. I'm like, man, the people who are 20 are going to be saying that when they're 50. You know, it's like everybody is on the same ride and there's so much we can learn from each other. I look at younger artists like Billie Eilish or like Kane Parsons, who did the Backrooms film that I found so inspiring. He was like 20 when he made the film. Mm-hmm. There's all of these brilliant, creative people in every regard. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you look at people like the Rolling Stones, still going. The greatest rock and roll band of all time is still alive and they're still playing music.
And
they're
taking
not
taking care of themselves, I would imagine, to still be able to
really
do that.
It really seems like it. Yeah, Or seeing Joni Mitchell. I saw Joni Mitchell a year or two ago at the Hollywood Bowl. Seeing Joni Mitchell is like seeing a sequoia tree speak or something.
You know,
like the power coming out of her was like almost hard to look at. You know, it was like so powerful. And tears are running down my face. I'm just like, anything is possible. Anything is, you know, it's just insane, the power coming off of her. That's the thing, I think. Or looking at Bob Weir, you know, right up until he died, you know, the power coming off him, the enjoyment coming off him. Or looking at Dylan still out there, still making incredible music. Again, it's like that matter of respect and love for ourselves helps us, what you were saying a minute ago, helps us have respect and love for everybody and not be jealous of anybody and not be resentful of anybody, you know, and look at the whole thing. Because God, I went through that phase too. If I'm in my 20s, being so wildly resentful of every other man that was more successful than us, and oh, look, they suck. I can't believe that they're doing this.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. You know, and you're just like, when you look back at it, you're just like, oh. But I think that's part of being trapped in the human thing.
Yeah.
I was so trapped in the story and the neuroses of Jim that I couldn't even see the rest of the painting. You know, there's this huge, infinite painting of which Jim is one tiny pixel. But somehow I think that pixel is the most important part of the painting.
Oh,
100%. It's insane.
Yeah. I mean, I think about some of the people that I felt threatened by in my 20s. I try and remind myself, if whenever it creeps up now and I'm like, a lot of them, I don't even remember who it was. I'm like, totally. Oh, remember that person? Yeah. They got that show I was wanting. Yep. And I'm like, what was their name? I don't even know.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Man, I've just had this realization, like my memory is good for this. Yeah. Like, in the last few days, that, like every little point of pain, jealousy, whatever that I have of a person, and it's like, oh man, how'd they get that? There's this moment right before that I almost don't notice where my first thought is, oh fuck, that's cool. How are they doing that? It always starts with, oh, fuck, that's cool. You know what I mean? So there's like this image, and we've mentioned this before on the show, where it's like, that's all it is. I think it was talking with John Moreland. John Moreland's like, I'm not jealous of things that I don't think are cool. If you're doing something that I don't think is cool, like, right. Cool, yeah, have fun.
You know? He was really generous with, struggling with jealousy. And he was like, I've learned it's information. It's showing me like what I want to work towards.
Michaela and I have been making this show for quite a while now, talking to some of our favorite artists about how they protect their sanity and stay inspired. We don't typically talk directly about our own work outside of the podcast here, but we wanted to open that door.
In addition to hosting this podcast, as well as touring and writing and recording my own music, I work one-on-one as a songwriting coach, helping people explore and expand their own creativity. If you're feeling blocked, navigating self-doubt, or just wanting to excavate deeper, more specific stories in your writing, I help you build a grounded practice you trust and get words back on the page.
And at the other end of the creative process in the studio, I work as a producer and a mix engineer. I love to partner with artists to take those songs and craft intentional, memorable records that last and create an environment that is open, where we can explore, and where creativity always comes first.
So if you're looking for guidance with your writing or you're ready to make your next record, we love connecting with people who care deeply about this work.
You can learn more about working with either of us at theother22hours.com/hosts. That's theother22hours.com/hosts. Or you can find links in the show notes.
I know we're nearing the end and we always have a question that we finish with, but before we answer that question, we saw online that you have done Mankind Project work.
Oh yeah, long time ago. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Aaron's deeply involved with Mankind Project, so we were wondering if you feel comfortable just chatting about it, also on the topic of, especially in the rock world, like masculinity and the men's work. Maybe mm-hmm. the men can talk about this. And
Well, I do think the term toxic masculinity is real, mm-hmm. and we're living in a patriarchal system that oppresses people who aren't part of that, you know, and I think there is a big responsibility for men to wake up and again begin to work on themselves and begin to heal themselves and begin to realize that we're all beautiful, we're all equal in our own special ways. Everybody has a part, you know, everybody is a part of the system. It's okay to cry. It's okay to get therapy. There's this outdated portrait of this man or whatever, you know, that you're supposed to be all tough and nothing can ever hurt you and you can never cry and you always gotta provide. There's something about that that is just a construct. It's just a fable as I look at myself. And I really think the whole concept of shades of sexuality or gender or all those mm-hmm. things too, I think are kind of just constructs and illusions. Like I feel like my own energy flows between the masculine and the feminine. And I feel like there's a lot of people waking up to this thing that things aren't always binary. Things aren't mm-hmm. always zero or one, you know, they're not always white or black. Again, trying to heal yourself, trying to find that stuff. And I do look at a lot of the men around me that are fathers. I'm not a father myself, but I do see a big change, a big shift in the consciousness between our fathers and this newer generation of fathers, where the fathers aren't afraid to tell their kids they love them or to give them a hug or to cry with them. You know, there's not this thing. Mm-hmm. I feel like so many people of our father's generation, a lot of it is survival shit too, where they're like, if you're alive, that means I love you. Yeah. End of story. You know what I mean? If you're still
just
breathing,
remember that. Yeah.
And you're not dead, that means you should know I love you. You know, I feel like that's kind of the thing. I think there's still a lot of this. We're on this evolutionary pathway. It takes a long time, you know, mm-hmm. but I think, again, that's one of the responsibility that the people who have held the power or whatever, who want to shift the power to a more equal playing field for everybody, have to be a part of that conversation. And I think that a lot of men have to be really, really present and really, really open to saying, like, we're all a part of this together. And I think that's where a lot of the damaged energy of the world comes from too. Men who perhaps they are trans and they can't come to terms with it, or perhaps they are gay and they can't come to terms with it, or whatever it is, and there's all of this angst, and there's all of this, they want to put everybody else down, and there's all this fighting when, again, if we could open up the channels, let people be who they are, let people express who they are, perhaps they were born into the wrong body, perhaps they need to investigate that, perhaps they are some shade of sexuality that isn't gay or straight, you know? Keep creating this world where everybody's safe and free to be who they want to be. And I think there's a lot of men who need to do a lot of work to really open up. And again, like what you were saying earlier, not be threatened by other people just because they're doing okay. You know what I mean? I think that's a big part of it. You know, it's like, you can be okay in your own beautiful way. You don't have to pretend to be something you're not. Because I think a lot of men out there are pretending to be something that they're not. And that's a very toxic way to live. And I think that's probably one of the biggest reasons we live in such a toxic culture. And also these role models we have currently, like these four or five rich men who hold the money and the power right now, their energy is extremely toxic, you know, and they need help bad. We don't condone their actions, but I do think instead of throwing more hatred at them, we can hope they can find some form of healing. You know, we can root for them to find some healing, because if they could find healing, perhaps they could let go and the whole system could begin to shift. Because I think people forget about that Star Wars effect too, of like, people forget that if you send more hatred at those people, it only makes their hatred stronger. The Star Wars thing, you know, it's like when the Emperor wants Luke to kill Darth Vader and he's like, yes, yes, hate him, kill him. You know, that thing is very real right now. You know, and I think a lot of people are, a lot of really, really good people from all sides of the spectrum are caught up in hating these people who are doing these vile things, you know, these detestable things. But it's like, you kind of have to find a way to separate the spirit of the person from the detestable things they're doing. You know what I mean? And hope somehow they can find healing. You know, if only these men could find healing and release this, we could begin to move the whole thing forward. And I think, and pray, hopefully eventually that'll happen. But again, it takes people doing the work for themselves, because nobody can do it for you.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. It's putting on your own mask before you put on somebody else's. So they say that every time you get on a flight, especially now when we fly with kids, it's like they come by and look you right in the eye. They're like, make sure you put your mask on before you put on their mask. And it's so true.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
You're not going to be able to help anybody if you're still swimming. And that, you know, that's so true what you're saying about spitting hatred back at them, and how that emboldens them is validating their worldview. They're like, see, I'm right. You know, there's already this massive ego from the wealth that they've amassed and all of that. You were talking earlier about old stories. It's like, it's the story of Icarus, however thousand year old that story is. It's the same thing. It's like, keep flying closer to the sun. But unfortunately, in our system and with capitalism and all of that, we are dragged with them as they amass all of this wealth. We're caught in that pull.
It always kind of grounds me in why these types of conversations feel important, because it's like one person could hear this and be like, wait, my favorite rock musician, Jim James, is talking about his feelings and the importance of this. Maybe I'll have the courage. Like, those tiny ripple effects that I think are really important, and why it's so helpful to share this kind of stuff, because something that might not feel that uncomfortable or now feels comfortable to talk about could feel so difficult to even approach for somebody because of the space that they're in, and hearing someone else talk about it with confidence and comfort, it could just crack the door open for them.
Well, I'm grateful to people like you all for creating these spaces, you know, for us to talk about this stuff. There's nothing more important to talk about, you know, than trying to achieve peace. I keep encouraging people to think about the protesters in Vietnam who put the flower down the barrel of the machine gun, you know, and I think that symbol is so important and so beautiful, because you can put love into the world and nobody can take that away from you. You can do that for the world, and you can't control who's going to come at you. You know, you can't control what's going to happen, but you can control your own sense of love and peace, and you can control what you put into the world. And I just keep trying to think about that. And all, with all the madness of the world, it's like, I'm going to try to put love out there. Easier said than done some days. You know, it's not like every day is easier, that you don't get mad, or that we don't all fuck up, or that we don't all make mistakes. But it's like, I keep coming back to that image in my mind. And I just think about that a lot.
Yeah, such a beautiful image. I love that one. Michaela mentioned that we wrap up our conversations the same way. And the question is kind of a choose your own adventure. So it can be either something that someone has told you along the way, something you've read, something that continues to kind of resonate and reverberate in your head that keeps your cup full, keeps you going, keeps you sane, inspired? Or conversely, something that you wish you knew at 17, 18, when you're first launching into your creativity being your career?
Man, I mean, I really think the self-love piece is a big piece. If I could have learned when I was 17 or 18 to just be nice to myself, just try and be kind to myself, what a difference that would have made. You know, if there could have been some way for me to wake up at that point and somehow see the larger picture and see that Jim isn't the star of the show, that he needs to be treated with kindness and love, you know, because I spent most of my life hating myself and trying to destroy myself. And I feel like, I wonder, what could my life have been like? And again, whatever, no regrets, it is what it is. But if somehow I could have found that when I was 18, mm-hmm. So if people can think about that, if somebody hears this who struggles with themselves or has depression or self-loathing, if they can know that they are beautiful just as they are, as mm-hmm. Mr. Rogers says, we are created this way for a reason, for a mm-hmm. limited time. It doesn't last forever. How can you find a way to love yourself? Because mm-hmm. it's going to be over soon. How can you find a way to make your role as the person you are at this point in time as beautiful as possible and try and love yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. That's beautiful. Yeah, if I had a voice when I was 17, that every time I did something, just said, that's okay, try again.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jim, thank you for taking time today to sit down with us and share your experience, share your thoughts. It means a lot.
Thanks.
This is really wonderful. So lovely to meet you and get to dig deep for a little bit.
Yeah, great to meet y'all too. Hopefully see you next time we're in Nashville.
Thank you.
All right, Jim. Thanks so much.
All right, take care.
We know your time is valuable and we're grateful you chose to spend this hour with us.
If this conversation resonated with you, know that it is just one of many. We have an archive of over 140 conversations. So if you're looking for where to go to next, you can find curated playlists by topic on our YouTube channel or simply scroll back in this feed to find our conversations with Roseanne Cash, New York Times bestselling author Maggie Smith, Lucius, JD McPherson, and many others.
This show is produced by me, Aaron Schaefer-Bates, with help from Michaela Ann. And all the music you hear is written, performed, and produced by me as well.
Our show is edited and mixed by Leland Holden at Podpunch, and we are proud members of the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network.
Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time.